activated. New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about
reaching up with Don Fess. Don Fess.
This is Don Fess, and we're reaching up again right now. All together in 204 countries with great in-person guests and music.
Hey, this is Duncan with the Newsboys, and I'm hanging here with Don.
Duncan Phillips, surfer, social justice advocate, and the incredible Australian longtime drummer of the Newsboys. He's joined us for a short time before, but now Duncan's with me in Sacramento for our first long interview. Well, Duncan, we last saw you at Alameda County Fair. I know you've put on a lot of miles. I was saying that I have too.
Yes, sir.
And I've never gotten to ask you. Soon you will be with the Newsboys 20 years. I know it's not 20 yet, but close.
Yeah.
How did it all start for you?
You know what? I grew up with the boys. I knew the boys. I think the band first started in 1985. Kind of grew up with the boys. We grew up kind of going to the same church and surfing every day. And it was kind of out of a friendship that, you know, I got to know them and know them well. But it wasn't for me, it wasn't until 93 that I just happened to be in Nashville and they just happened to lose their keyboardist drummer. It was just their keyboardist. And I actually, believe it or not, I play keyboards as well as drums. And you know, what was so funny is the typical Aussie fashion, they made me go to an audition, and they totally made me sweat it out, because we were kind of, we were good friends, but kind of good competitors at the same time, because back in the day, I was in another band, so we kind of had this kind of rivalry going on. So I remember Pete and the boys kind of made me squirm there for a day or two, but I remember I got the gig, And 3 days later, I was playing in front of 60,000 people at a festival up in Pennsylvania called Creation. And that was my baptism of fire, so to speak. I can't really remember much about it. I was so concentrating and intense on what I was doing. I had to block it out because that's, as you mentioned, that's nearly 20 years ago now, and a lot of water under the bridge.
See, I thought you were going to tell me that it happened while you were walking with your surfboard on a beach in Australia.
Yeah, I've many, many fond memories of growing up in Australia, of course. We started, funny enough, we started in a garage just like any other band does, and drove all the neighbors crazy. And I remember this one guy got so upset with us back in the day that we had this little crapped out little van, and he went and poured sugar in our van. And of course, you know what that does when you pour sugar in a tank, it blows the motor up somehow. And so that was, we knew that we had to move on from that point. But well, the funny story is we had nothing. We didn't have two crackers to scrape together. So to insulate the room, we got all these old egg crates. We went to this distributor, said, look, we want all the old egg crates. They were cardboard back in the day. And we insulated the whole room. We got all these old mattresses. And in the middle of summer in Australia, I mean, it had to be 120 degrees in that thing. We didn't have any air conditioning. So I remember we'd go in there for about 45 minutes at a time, thrash out a few songs, walk out, you know, kind of dripping wet, you know, skull half a gallon of water, and go back in there and do it all over again. So
people can't imagine, but we actually had a radio studio with egg crates.
With what?
With egg
crates. You did, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, back in the day, I mean, they actually work actually very well because they were kind of this kind of absorbent cardboard material, and they kind of had these, you know what egg crate is. So they added ground. I think we got the bigger ones. I think they were 24, and they were kind of just a sheet. We just went and stapled them all over the wall. It was great.
Now I want to know how that egg company gets gets their logo on the egg without breaking it. But that's a whole other interview.
You know what? I love those shows, those How They Do It shows or whatever they're called. And I've actually seen them do it, but it's very gingerly. Let me tell you.
I would think. Okay, so you've been all these years with the Newsboys. Then Peter left as lead singer, and for what, almost 2 years now?
Yep.
Michael's,
that's
who
right,
we've had on,
right,
is,
little over 2 years
has
here,
been lead singer. And I believe you said that this is just about the last year has been the best year you've ever had with the Newsboys.
You know what, it really is, because I think, you know, maybe the last few years of Peter's tenure, I think he was kind of getting, he was just over it, you know what I mean? And I think he was kind of getting tired, and he just, you know, before he left, he said, guys, you know, I've got nothing left. The well's dry, and I can't go on, kind of thing. And, well, we said, well, gosh, you know, we were sorry to hear it, obviously, because he's been a dear mate for many years. And we just said, well, you know, we really want to continue this thing, and we really feel like we've got something to say. We enjoy what we do. We believe we're called to it. And so he was actually very helpful back in the first, you know, 2 or 3 months. The funny story is we actually met Michael and the DC Talk Boys when we first ever came over from Australia to America. We met Michael, and they were just starting out, DC Talk, and we actually toured with them for about 18 months.
That's a lot of years ago.
That's a lot of years ago now. It was like, gosh, what was it, 89, 90? And, but it was, what was so great, the story is it was, Michael was the one that we always kind of was closest to. I don't know if you remember, about 8 or 9 years ago, we recorded a live DVD at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And the first guy we thought to come and guest on that was Michael Tate. So Michael Tate has sung with the Newsboys, before. So it was kind of this real, and Michael was always, you know, more than, you know, we knew Michael could sing it, we knew he had the chops, we knew he had the talent, but more so for us, it was a very natural decision for us to ask Michael because he was a good mate and a guy that we've known for many, many years. So I know some people kind of wrestled with it a little bit, but I think once they saw the show, they thought, oh, my gosh, you know. And the thing is, when you're in a band, it's like a marriage. You cannot fake that funk. You can't fake it. It either works or it does. There's either chemistry there or there's not. And I think with Michael, we do have a similar history. I think back in the day, if you're a Newsboys fan, you're a DC Talk fan and vice versa. So we were very aware of that. We wanted to make sure that we didn't get some kid in that people are going to say, oh, well, they're just trying to milk this thing for few years.
Sure.
And I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, INXS, who I grew up with.
Actually, yes.
Yeah, loved that band growing up as a kid.
Yeah, I saw them several times in Canada.
Did you really?
The original.
the original band, and love their music. I think my first record was Shubu Shaba was the first record that they did. Then The Swing was a great record, and X and Kick and all the rest of them. But anyway, huge fan. And when they had that competition a few years ago to get a new lead singer, and you know they were in their mid-40s, late-40s at the time, and then they got this 26-year-old kid, and I was just like, no, these are my boys.
Not Michael, right?
Right.
Michael Hutchins.
No, well, Michael Hutchins died.
Yeah, I know.
And so, number one, it's very hard to replace Michael Hutchins because the guy was
incredible.
I think he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Absolutely brilliant. And so I was like, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, Terence Trent D'Arby. I was thinking that kind of the guy that I knew could do the and would make sense in that way. So we were very aware of that. We were like, you know what, we've got to get someone to make sense here. We can't, you know, because the temptation is, okay, let's get some young kid that looks like Peter, maybe an Aussie, you know what I mean? You're tempted to go down that route. But then we thought, no, this has to be a line in the sand here. There has to be a line. We didn't want Michael to come in and sing Newsboys karaoke. It had to be, and that's why I think that the record was so different, the Born Again record. You've got to bring the fans with you. If you bring out a record that is too far removed from what they know, are we good? You might lose some. People get confused. It's like, this ain't my band. So we're aware of that, but we also think, you know, we do have to make a line in the sand. And bringing Michael on board, and that's why we, within the first 6 months, we got a record out. It was madness. We got the record out, and the first light at the end of the tunnel was the first week when it debuted. A lot of people look at debut numbers, record debut numbers, as like, okay, a lot of promoters look at it, a lot of record people, a lot of industry people, okay, how's this record going to sell? Are people resonating with this branding? And our first week, we debuted at number 4 on Billboard's Top 200. And we had never done that before. So at that point, after, you know, 8 or 9 months of kind of torture almost, it was just like, that's when we breathed that first sigh of relief. It's like, okay, I think this is going to work. I think it's going to work.
I've got to tell you, when I saw you all at Spirit West Coast, and you performed so many numbers from the new album.
That's right.
I was blown away. I thought it was really, really good. And truthfully, and I really don't kid around about this, there are more songs from that album, from one album, that I play than almost any other album since maybe the Beatles.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I think it's an incredible album. Born Again, folks, in case you don't know.
It's funny you say that, because usually in the past when we brought out a new record, You might introduce one or two new songs. People want to hear, you know, the nostalgia for the most part. This record, we're just about playing every song on the record. It's crazy. We've never done this in history. But if you look back at history, if you look at other bands, any band that stood the test of time, at least once or twice in their career, have had this huge kind of monumental shift. You two have done
They've
had this kind of... to keep up with the times almost, and I think this has been one for us for sure. I think the record, the Born Again record, is probably one of the most modern, most current sounding records. I mean, Newsboys has always been known as that pop band, but we definitely had our quirky little, our little niche. But I think looking back on it now, it only related to a certain amount of people, where the Born Again record, I think, relates to probably a greater spectrum of people than maybe the older stuff did.
I want to ask you about something else, but just before I do, a professor at a university in South Carolina, North Carolina, just came out with a book about the history of Christian contemporary music and how in the 60s there were a lot of pop songs that were spiritual in nature.
Yes.
And then as Christian contemporary music just began in the late 60s, suddenly everything was split.
Yes.
And I just want to mention to you that we are about the only network, heard 200 countries and more now, that plays secular music and Christian music, but music that uplifts people, because any kind of music can.
Yeah.
And to
Absolutely.
Me, it's a joy to have people hear music like your music, the Newsboys music, even if they're not Christian, even if they never heard a Christian contemporary radio station.
Yeah.
And that's really the way it should be, and I hope it gets that way
again.
You
know what? I couldn't agree with you more. I don't know how this division started. It was probably a business decision by someone, a record label, let's pigeonhole this, then we'll know how to market it. It was probably a marketing decision, I'm guessing, because when in Australia when we first started, it wasn't the fact, are you Christian or not? Is, are these guys good or not?
Sure.
That's what it was. And, you know, obviously you sing about what your life is. Most people do, whether it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll, whether it's faith or whether it's, you know, Hinduism or whatever it is. You sing about your life, right? So, and we were just singing about our life. So, but when we first came to America, that's when we became pigeonholed. And it was kind of really weird for us for a little while. We thought, well, this is America. It's a huge market. That's how it is. But it confused us for a little bit because we weren't used to that. But I really do hope that it gets back to that again. And I think there are certain bands, like over the years, Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, Skillets of the world, POD. There's a lot of bands that have kind of pushed those boundaries into the mainstream market.
But I've got to tell you, I don't know if you're familiar with Justin Bieber's song Pray.
Yes.
We play it all the time, and we play it on a Christian network, and people love it.
Love it. It's a great song. And you know what? That kid, I know people that know him, and they say, you know, comes from a Christian home. Just, you know, for the most, as much as a young kid with all this fame can be. But, you know, I've heard he's just a great, really well-rounded Christian kid, you know.
But I got to tell you, his manager, Scotty, comes from an Orthodox Jewish home Connecticut.
Mm.
And what they do now, before they do anything, a concert, a business deal, they pray together, and Justin has taught him, and he says the Lord's Prayer, and he's taught Justin the Jewish High Holy Shema prayer. And that's kind of the way it should be, because they're both honoring God.
Awesome. Love that.
Which leads me to my last question for today. And we'll just scratch the surface today and hopefully do this again next year. But What are your passions these days? I when I last talked to you, you were building homes in the Baja.
That's right.
What else is passionate for you?
We are still doing that. We're still very active in getting as many people. Just this last summer, we went down to the Baja. And if people that don't know this, we love dirt bikes and we ride. For many years now, we've ridden down the Baja, a lot of the Baja 1000 course. And we love Mexico, love getting down there. And we just saw an incredible need and going down there and just thought, well, what can we do? How can we somehow leverage our branding to help people down here? And we end up hooking up with a guy down there called Baja Bob. He's crazy as a hatter. But I think, you know, sometimes God uses crazy people. You know, I think you've got to be a little bit crazy. You do. I mean, I'm serious. I think.
No, I agree with you.
I think he loves people that aren't quite orthodox, that aren't quite normal, you know. And he was someone that we resonated with. And just last summer, we took down about 1,000 kids that we kind of signed up over a period of time. Say, hey, Newsboys are going down to build homes in Baja. Please come with us. And, you know, we ended up building a whole community down there. And it was very rewarding. But one of the best things for me, Don, was walking away from, you know, putting that set of keys. Now, these are people that live in the dirt. There's open sewers running through the streets. No real protection from the elements. You know, dirt, little fire over in the corner, you know, just smelly, you know, just conditions that you can't imagine. But when you leave, they're on a concrete slab. They have windows, doors. They have doors they can lock, windows they can open and lock. They have electricity. All these things that we take so much for granted, the feeling that you get as a human being walking away from that family.
You know, it's funny. Before I came to Capital Christian today, I had a couple of hours in the hotel, flicked on TV, and for a second time I watched this film, 2012, about the end of the world. And yeah. Back in Oakland, there's a pastor who's got billboards all over the Bay Area, yeah, saying that the world's going to end on May 21st. But the point of all that, the reason I'm bringing that up is, what if it was true? I mean, we don't know when.
Yeah.
How do we encourage people to live their lives now for other people and for serving God, yeah, like it was the next to the last day?
It's a great point, and I think it's a question that we should ask ourselves. I really believe that we should live our lives as though it's our last day. No fear. You know, it's very easy to say we get bogged down with the things of the world. I personally don't believe it is. And the reason why I say that is because it says in the Word that Christ is not going to come back until, you know, he's going to come back for a church without spot or wrinkle or blemish. And we ain't there yet. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's not my place to know. It even says in his Word it's not our place to know. I really don't care in that sense. I really believe that it's not. I mean, If it was, fantastic. We're out of here. Great. But I personally don't think that we're there yet. I don't think the church is there yet. But that's just my opinion.
And the church is us.
The church is us. I just don't think there's the unity there. We're definitely not without spot or blemish or wrinkle. You know what I mean? I don't think that the world has really seen who we are. I think they have an idea of who we are, and most of it is negative. But if they really knew what true Christianity was like, I think a lot more people would be attracted to it.
I spent a lot of time with William Paul Young, who wrote The Shack.
Yes.
Lovely guy.
Yes.
And that's what he talks about, acting like Jesus.
Yes.
Being Jesus to the
yes.
world.
Yes. Is this what
rather,
we're called to do?
Rather than religion. This rule, that rule, judging this person, judging that person.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. I think... And that is part of our PR battle, is people see prominent Christians that have stuffed up or said stupid things or acted irresponsibly. Oh, well, if that's what it means to be a Christian, I don't want it. And I agree with them. I'm like, hey, I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. But that's not true Christianity. You know, Christianity is being Christ-like. You know who Christ hung with? He didn't hang with the famous people. He hung with the tax collectors, the prostitutes, the down and outers. That's who he hung with. because that's who needed him the most. So I think we've kind of got, a little bit skewed. We've got a little bit turned around. I think as Christians, we need to stop worrying about our perception as far as, you know, look at us, we're this or that. You know what? Christ didn't do that. And if we're Christ followers, what should we do?
I can't think of a better note to end on. Duncan, great to see you again, talk to you again, and hope we do this many more years.
This is Don Fass. Join us next weekend and keep reaching up. And be sure to tell us where you're listening. Write me at reachinguprradio@gmail.com. reachinguprradio@gmail.
This is the Celebrate Radio Network.
Radio Network.
From Seattle to Paris, Bangkok to Jerusalem.